by staging these horrific attacks like this, by ramping up violence, is trying to extract more concessions from the United States.
Taliban attacks continue amid Afghan peace talks. It's Wednesday, September 4th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us as well on Facebook at VOA Asia. Also ahead, Hong Kong's chief executive stays put, India's citizenship crisis, bulk buying is popular with Chinese shoppers. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The Taliban claimed responsibility for an explosion in Kabul late Monday, just hours after a U.S. negotiator shared with Afghan President Ashraf Ghani key details of a deal that would see thousands of American troops leaving Afghanistan. An Afghan government spokesman said the blast in the Green Village compound, which houses international organizations and guest houses, killed at least 16 people and wounded 119 others. Police said they had rescued 400 foreign nationals from the complex and transferred them to a safe place. Earlier, U.S. officials said they had reached a draft framework agreement with the Taliban that will require some American troops to vacate five military bases in Afghanistan within 135 days of the signing of the document. Michael Kugelman is the deputy director of the Asia program and senior associate for South Asia at the Wilson Center in Washington, D.C. VOA Asia's Ira Melman asked him if the Taliban's continuing displays of violence were conducive to a peace agreement with the United States.
Well, unfortunately, this is the cruel logic of the Taliban. I know that as these negotiations have gathered steam with the United States and as they've gotten into their more advanced stages, the Taliban has been ramping up its violence. So this is not the first time in recent days that we've had a mass casualty attack in Afghanistan. I mean, basically what the Taliban is trying to do here is strengthen its position in talks. It wants to essentially send a message to the United States of, look, we can do this whenever we want. We're very strong. And if we don't get the type of deal that we want, we're just going to return to the battlefield and do more of this. In other words, the Taliban, by staging these horrific attacks like this, by ramping up violence, is trying to extract more concessions from the United States at peace talks. So, yeah, I mean, it looks bad. The optics of it are atrocious. But this is what the Taliban does. And I should say as well, I mean, trying to look at this in a big picture, the United States has also ramped up its own offensives. It's been ramping up its kinetic activities, working with Afghan forces to push back against the Taliban on the battlefield. So both the U.S. and the Taliban have been ramping up the violence, so to speak. But with the Taliban, of course, what you have is the way they showcase their violent capacities and abilities is by staging these horrific attacks, even as we get so close to a deal with the United States.
Which one would think would mean that a deal isn't completely done, right?
Well, I mean, I think that it seems like every day for the last 2 months, there's been some type of media headline saying U.S. and Taliban very close to a deal, and yet then the deal is not finalized. I think it's going to be some more time. Clearly, one thing that's very clear is that President Trump himself has not signed off on the deal. So Zalmay Khalilzad, the top U.S. negotiator, has been very public in laying out many of the details of this draft deal, but he himself has said it a number of times that this is not going to be final until President Trump has been able to sign off on it. And I think that the U.S. is trying to do some damage control. Its relationship with Kabul is very bad, and I think that what the U.S. wants to do is to try to get as much buy-in and consensus from the Afghan government as it can. So Khalilzad was in Kabul recently to talk to the Afghan leadership about the deal, and as I understand it, the Afghan government is going to have a few days to sort of look over the agreement and get back to the Americans. I know that the U.S. is trying to share the draft deal with NATO partners as well. So I think it's going to be a bit more time, but I actually think they're fairly close to a deal. I think it's more an issue of when you get the buy-in that you need from the Afghan government and from other NATO countries. I don't really think there has to be that much more negotiating between the U.S. and the Taliban. At the end of the day, they both want a troop withdrawal agreement, and they've almost got one.
VOA Asia's Ira Melman speaking with Michael Kugelman, Deputy Director of the Asia Program and Senior Associate for South Asia at the Wilson Center in Washington, D.C. These are among some of the top Asia stories that you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. U.S. President Donald Trump warns China not to delay in reaching a trade pact. The Solomon Islands are eyeing a shift in diplomatic ties from China to Taiwan. Hong Kong's leader refutes saying she would quit if she had a choice. You'll find expanded coverage of all these stories and much more when you visit us at Facebook at VOA Asia. We also invite you to stop by our voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam said Tuesday she has never asked the Chinese government to let her resign to end the city's political crisis. She was responding to a Reuters report about a voice recording of her saying that she would step down if she could. Reuters correspondent Michelle Hennessy has more.
Your answer does not arise. I have never tendered any resignation.
Hong Kong leader Carrie Lam was forced to respond to a Reuters special report on Tuesday. The report included leaked audio from a private meeting. She's heard telling a group of business people she would resign if she could, and that she's stuck between two masters.
For a chief executive to have caused this huge havoc to Hong Kong is unforgivable. It's just unforgivable. If I have a choice, the first thing is to quit. Having made a deep apology, is to step down. The room, the political room for the chief executive, who unfortunately has to serve two masters by constitution, that is the Central People's Government and the people of Hong Kong, that political room for maneuvering is very, very, very limited.
Lam's resignation is one of the key demands of protesters who want her gone after she tried to pass a hugely unpopular extradition bill that would have seen suspects sent to mainland China for trial. It's since morphed into calls for the people of Hong Kong to be able to choose their own chief executive. Rolling protests show no signs of losing steam, despite more than 1,000 arrests since the outbreak of violence. On Tuesday, Lam said Beijing still trusts her government to solve this three-month crisis and that they'd never prevented her from stepping down.
I told myself repeatedly in the last 3 months that I and my team should stay on to help Hong Kong.
Later on Tuesday, China's Hong Kong and Macau Affairs Office said anyone who wants to achieve universal suffrage in the Chinese-ruled city will get nowhere, and reiterated Beijing's support for the embattled Carrie Lam.
Michelle Hennessy of Reuters. UN High Commissioner for Refugees Filippo Grandi is urging Indian authorities to take steps to ensure that no one in the northeastern state of Assam is rendered stateless. Nearly 2 million people were recently struck off Assam's citizenship list and are at risk. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency does not question India's sovereign right and authority to establish who is an Indian national. But it says the risk of people excluded from the citizenship roll and becoming stateless is of great concern. UNHCR spokesman Baba Balash tells VOA all means must be taken to ensure this does not happen.
What we are asking India is to ensure that adequate access to information, legal aid, and legal recourse in accordance with UNHCR's mandate and international standards is followed so people are not left without a nationality.
People have 120 days in which to prove their citizenship before regional quasi-judicial bodies. Those deemed to be illegal immigrants can then appeal to higher courts. Balash says it is too early to know how this will work out. But he says he worries many people who do not have access to the right information and documentation and do not have the financial means to pursue the appeals process may end up stateless.
We are urging the government to take steps that mitigate the risk of any individual being left stateless as a result of this exercise. We have seen some encouraging statements from the Ministry of External Affairs that they will make sure that all the people who have been excluded have access to their rights.
The UNHCR warns any process that could leave nearly 2 million people in Assam state without a nationality would be a big blow to global efforts to eradicate statelessness. The agency estimates up to 10 million people are stateless worldwide. Stateless people lack all basic rights of citizenship. They have no right to an education, to work, to health care, or to register births or marriages. Bangladesh currently hosts more than 1 million Muslim Rohingya refugees whom the government of Myanmar has stripped of their rights of citizenship and rendered stateless. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Coming up, a rush to get into a store and no rush to visit a region. You're listening to VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. China is funding new efforts to boost its natural gas production, especially from so-called unconventional sources such as shale gas. China's efforts to reduce its dependence on gas imports are taking on increased importance in light of a festering trade war with the United States. Visit VOA Asia Facebook for this and much more. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, a large U.S. retail store opens with much excitement in China, while unrest and uncertainty drive tourists away in Kashmir. These are the topics on today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Skylar Ogden.
U.S. retail giant Costco recently opened its first store in China. The new Costco store will be targeting China's growing affluent middle class, who know the Costco brand from international travels. Julia Zhu is a Costco member.
So whenever I come back to China, I would bring many boxes of things back. Now Shanghai has one. I came here immediately to get a membership card.
Analysts say Costco faces a tough road and will be operating in an environment where many other international retailers have failed. Richard Zhang, Costco's senior vice president, says that the company has taken time to make sure that the market is mature enough and that consumers know their brand. Costco's new business venture is launching in a still tense trading environment between the United States and China. It's expected that by the end of the year, the trade dispute will affect nearly all imports and exports between the two countries. In Kashmir, tourism has dropped after India revoked the region's autonomy, suspended phone and internet access in the region, and sent in government troops to control the region. According to government figures, the number of visitors dropped from more than 1.3 million in 2012 to 850,000 in 2018 in the Indian part of Kashmir. Many locals who make a living off of tourism are suffering. Bashir is a houseboat owner.
90% is tourism. 90% of Kashmiri people earn through tourism, so they're dependent on tourism. That's true like this, and they've trapped us. Even on Eid, we couldn't buy anything. We couldn't buy any vegetable. We couldn't buy any food for our family. We couldn't celebrate.
The estimated $500 million tourism industry is central to Indian Kashmir's economy and employs roughly 100,000 people. For VOA's Business Scene, I'm Skylar Ogden.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You'll find our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. We stream it every day on VOA Asia Facebook, perhaps. That's how you're listening to it right now. You can also find it on voanews.com. That's our website. We thank everybody who's been listening today, including everybody who joined us on Facebook at VOA Burmese. Thanks so much for listening to our program. We also thank our director, Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling, managing editor Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Keith Lane, and we say hello to Michelle Liu, who streamed our program on Facebook. We hope you have a great day today.